to another Directions Magazine podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. I'm here today in London, UK, at the Bentley Systems Year in Infrastructure Conference, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Richard Zambuni, the Global Marketing Director for Geospatial and Utilities, and Rob Mankowski, the Vice President for Software Development. And we discussed Bentley's strategy in the geospatial solution marketplace. I hope you enjoy the interview. Please stay tuned.
Okay, so I'll pick up on a bit of our discussion that we had in the briefing. So it was interesting just how much the question about the providing more pure geospatial technology and how it's embedded into the rest of Bentley infrastructure, while you may not provide as many. So I guess, would you agree that this is not necessarily a product strategy, but an evolution of product development, that you see this in being embedded across so much of the Bentley portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, but I think what I was saying is that this has been the strategy for, I would say, for 7-8 years, very explicitly, which is to, Joe, you and I have talked about this many times. We're not competing in the generic GIS market. It's all about GIS infrastructure, and we articulated that some time ago. And then, what does that mean? It means about making it available seamlessly within infrastructure-specific workflows. And initially, that was more focused on design, information modeling, and management workflows within traditional GIS cloud, if you like, or wrapper. That's not a good thing to mention, so everybody's really connect. And that's moving now more into operations as well. And I threw the AssetWise Evira performance management example in there, because I only learned about that myself yesterday, that that they were talking about that they're going to spatially enable AssetWise. More for me for not knowing that, but that's coming generally as well in our AssetWise platform, will become spatially enabled. We have some spatial capabilities now in XOR, but ProjectWise already. But all of our platform technology will be spatial, because MicroStation only is geo-coordinated. You can manage your engineering information, do your engineering information management spatially and ProjectWise, and the operations side is coming.
Do you think that that's more of a something you're hearing from the client based, as opposed to as a product strategy? Do you see?
Yeah. Okay.
That? Yeah.
On the operations side, the operations side very much driven by the clients, absolutely, utterly. I mean, their requirements for what they want to do, managing assets over large spatial extents, requires very powerful spatial capabilities in that technology.
Yeah,
I would agree. I think it is very much market driven, in that the needs of our users to find and manage their information by geospatial coordinates, or in other ways too. Let's not forget about linear referencing as well, yeah. Right, as a way of locating information about your assets. As Richard said, sort of the AssetWise Evira system there being spatially enabled means not only geospatial coordinates and geospatial management, but also the linear referencing for linear assets like roads and rail,
yeah,
and pipelines and so forth.
Sure. You mentioned also something about the support for Esri file-based geodatabases.
Yes.
Where do you think now that is fitting into the typical user workflow? So obviously some customers have Esri, some people have Bentley solutions. Where are you finding that was necessary to put in the support for geodatabases, and where in the workflow do you see that?
Let me try and answer that first to see if I, Bob, shoot me down or correct me or add or whatever. But I mean, what I understand is that, again, particularly where subcontractors are, they want to do the editing in Bentley Map, edit the spatial information in Bentley Map, but they're being asked to work with an Esri personal geodatabase. I mean, that's what they've been given to work with. So it's primarily a sort of contractor type requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah, absolutely one of the use cases that we see. And in other cases, it may be that they're using information that came from an Esri world within their project, but maybe their project is for something else. So, for example, they may be doing a utility project and using Bentley Utilities Designer for that project, but they want to reference in base mapping information from an Esri store, right? That they, now they can just leverage those file geodatabases directly in their Bentley Map environment and not have to go through, you know, some intermediate conversion step or something like that, right? And so it's all, you know, I think as Richard said, one of the use cases may be where they're working on the asset, which is managed in Esri, but they're using Bentley software to edit it. Another case might be it's just other information that they need to reference in. And for example, I think this ties into your first question about having Bentley geospatial technology throughout our product portfolio. In a case like InRoads or Geopack in our civil engineering design suites, where you're designing a road, and it is they are the standard, you know, road design software packages. But again, something like base map information or parcel information may be coming from an Esri world, and now our road designers can just seamlessly bring in that that file-based geodatabase into their environment because the Bentley geospatial technology is in our road design software.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I was saying, you know, it wasn't on the side. I haven't gotten into that sort of discussion. I think someone was asking the question, but you know, we've tried, you know, and from the technology perspective, and what the product manager is doing, and you know, we see it ourselves existing in a multi-vendor world in a geospatial environment, and we want to be good citizens for Microsoft and Oracle and Esri and so on, and that means, you know, because people are bring that data in from different environments and different situations. We want to be the excellent aggregator and editing environment and all the advantages you have of doing that in Bentley Map and the technology we have, but you know, it's coexistence, and we want to be able to do that really, really well. You know, we say that about a lot about geospatial technology, and you know, whether it's the civil side of it, or it's the utility side of it, or more pure geospatial workflows.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, because one of the things that I'm hearing or heard from Greg and Malcolm, this integrated approach, and I think that's where everybody is trying to go. You know, they want to be the integrator for all of this disparate data. But where I see you playing, where Bentley plays a lot, and you demonstrated nicely in the Crossrail project, is everything is coming together. You can manage an entire life cycle of a project, and you're now extending that into more of a cost management approach and getting people, you mentioned kind of like the health of the project, and and that's different.
Metrics on the project, I mean, that's all new stuff. I mean, absolutely, you know, project-wise, I mean, you know, you're capturing a lot of information there, which will, you know, the engineering companies, you know, they get a lot of efficiency from project-wise, but what it doesn't do at the moment, and the future capabilities will, allow them to sort of benchmark their projects and be able to see how efficient they've been on that project in relation to other similar projects and so on and so forth. At the moment, you can't do that. In the future, you'll be able to do that. That'll add a lot of commercial value to the interactions you're having with that engineering content through ProjectWise. Crossrail, as an example, is a brilliant one because they've just been so visionary. And I mean, based in the UK a lot of the time, and I get a lot of exposure to Crossrail one way or another out of that London office. The thoughtfulness and the ambition with what they're trying to do, it's dramatic. It is utterly dramatic. I mean, they, and you know, if you just take slices of what they're doing, that, you know, and you know, there was one we were looking at in my group, which was 4D construction scheduling and simulation. And the point being is, you can only do that sort of stuff, and I was saying, you know, if you put the investment into the 3D, intelligent 3D models in the first place, and then you can do all these other sorts of things. You can take them to operate, and they're doing all that. And it's not, it's all with an intense vision and a very complete vision that's incredibly impressive. Scale of that project and the rigor and the take no prisoners attitude to the engineering contractors and consultants, which is, we're doing it like this because we, you know, the end game is to operate a railway very efficiently. So working back from that end game, we want it like this, and it's no discussion. This is how we want the deliverables. We want the deliverables that can do all these things. So either you sign up for that, or we'll find someone who will.
Right.
They're also rigorous.
Right. But I think also they recognize that they need to provide their contractors with an environment and training and so forth. Right.
And so it's a take. So it's not exactly. So
it's not like either do this or right. It's like we will help you in many ways achieve what we're doing. You know.
Yeah.
And so because they want to remove barriers to making it happen. Right. And so.
Yeah, and I think they've done an excellent job.
Right, so we have like worked with them to create what we were calling the Crossrail Academy. I think that name is going to change because I think we're going to generalize it a bit. But we have that in our London office here, where contractors can come in and experience, you know, and get trained on, and I believe even certified, don't they?
Yes.
So they've done a great job, and probably pushed you as much as you've pushed them.
Yes.
Yeah, and so they've done a great deal on the construction design build part. How much do you think is going to be taken, and I'll ask this from a geospatial point of view, on the operational side? Can they take what they've done, and how would they take what they've done and push it to operations management and asset management?
Well, they've created, I mean, the way that they've created the views into the assets, they've created multiple views of the assets, and the spatial one is one of the major ones, and that will be persisted into the operational phase. So they call it
crossroad maps,
isn't it? It's called crossroad maps, which is seems a little, you know, maps. You still think of them, but that is probably at the very heart of what they're doing. Literally at the heart of what they're doing, and that will persist into the operations phase. They, you know, this is one of those situations where the commissioning body, as in Crossrail, and the engineer, you know, the project-oriented body, is thinking about the operations intrinsically from the get-go. You know, there's no, you know, throwing the, as Greg puts it, you know, throwing the keys over the, now go away and operate it. We designed it, but, you know, good luck. they want a 21st century railway operation, and they started, you know, work back from that.
Let me ask you about some of the different data types. We talked about point clouds. Mm-hmm. I talked about the integration of point clouds with other basic geospatial information. It seems like that environment, and you mentioned it specifically in your presentation about that just becomes another data element. What is it about point clouds and the data that's being captured within an individual element that is kind of exploding the notion of 3D models and be able to use this very accurate data type? More so than almost any other data type that we've collected. Where are users finding the true applicability of point clouds?
Well, there's actually, so let's step back from point clouds in a second, right? In terms of accuracy, there's actually quite a big range of accuracy you can achieve with point clouds. So not every point cloud is.
Right, you can degrade the cloud if you want to.
Yeah,
well not every point cloud is equal anyway.
Point cloud is equal, exactly. So there's different lasers that have different price points, and you know there's going to be all sorts of innovation in this area because it really is a disruptive technology, you know, in the way we measure the world. But you have to, you know what you're getting, right? So if you capture it one way, maybe you're getting data that's only accurate to within a couple of
for visualization or something. Yeah, so for, you know, for visualization purposes, you can, you know, get a fairly, you know, cheap low grade, you know, but that is
for asset management.
Yeah, whereas engineering grade, we're talking about sub centimeter, less than centimeter accuracy.
Couple,
yeah. And the other thing I think that's getting, let's let Bob finish. Sorry, come on.
No, so I was just going to say, so in terms of the applicability of point clouds and where do we see them, it's sort of all over the place. From asset management, where they're, you know, either like say using mobile LiDAR capabilities to capture literally thousands and thousands of miles of highway and the the assets around the highway, and then being able, and you know, that data that they're capturing may not be fit for purpose for design because of the accuracy, the sort of the relative and absolute accuracy characteristics of it, but it's certainly very good for asset management, knowing what you have and approximately, you know, very closely to where it is, but not within centimeters, you know. Whereas some of the data, you know, we're finding getting some very accurate data. And I think what's interesting too is sort of this, you know, this use of the data as a model of the as-built environment, right? So that's where we see a lot of value that we can add to being able to use point clouds and vector models together in a single environment where you can use the point cloud to be the model of what exists today and then the vector model of what you're proposing or planning to create, right? So you can scan what's there and use the traditional sort of vector models to create what, you know, you're designing and sort of the vision for what will be there. And so, you know, point clouds are becoming more and more common in workflows every day. And I think that in some ways the
And the price
software.
point is getting lower on the equipment and all that, yeah.
Exactly. So it's getting to be smaller equipment, more affordable. I think we're starting to see aerial systems that actually, you know, are done by drone sort of things, right? And on UAV, right? Kinds of environments. And I think, you know, we're starting to see drones that are handheld and launched, you know, and capturing aerial photography today because, you know, the laser scanners are still, you know, for I think the most part, still a bit too bulky. But those things are going to get miniaturized. They're going to be, and I think people are going to be able to just, you know, toss
Toss
a
them out,
plane into
yeah,
the air
and
and get a
launched.
scan and, you know, and then be able to have the software on the back end to work with that data and do, you know,
Yeah.
some really
In
interesting
some ways, I mean, the
things.
software's been playing catch up a little bit with the, you know, the ability of the hardware to capture high quality data. I mean, I think that's, you know,
And volumes
that
and
thing's getting
volumes of.
closed, you know, the gap's getting closed, but, you know, definitely software's playing catch up for a while because, you know, the vector of, you know, change in terms of, you know, the cost and quality of data was going down, and the software was going, oh, that's trying to, but now software's coming up, and I think those of us in the infrastructure world, you know, if we don't take point clouds seriously, you know, we should be taken out and shot because they are ubiquitous and they are fundamental. I mean, they're intrinsically 3D. I mean, so there we are, we've been pushing the 3D story for,
For
you
a
know,
long
however,
time,
yeah, right? And here's a, you know, fundamental data type
So,
that's intrinsically 3D. And there's
well, I would even go further and say it's intrinsically 4D in the sense that every point actually has, there is a like sort of a time of acquisition to it too, right? So you, we're seeing in some use cases of scans of the same area through time, and then using those scans to compare to each other and difference to each other. So, for example, on a construction site, if you have a retaining wall that you've put in, there needs to be settlement, so it's going to settle, and you have to wait until that settles before you can start to backfill behind it and things like this. So they're using point clouds and well, they're using LiDAR scanners to repeatedly scan that wall. And then using the scans to determine within, you know, we're talking about inches of settlement here,
Accuracy,
right?
yeah.
Yeah, very, you know, and determining, okay, when has it, you know, stopped settling, and now I can go ahead and start to backfill behind that. So in a construction use case. So in a sense, I would say it's almost, it's intrinsically 4D almost in that you know, the scan represents a point in time.
So that really presents a challenge to you from a number of different areas. One, a different type of processing, change detection. You want to be able to completely provide an analytical tool to do change detection.
Okay, I'll interrupt you there very
Yeah.
quickly. So we already have, you know, we well, we already have differencing capabilities in point tools. We can difference between to the point cloud. So we can say, hang on, that wasn't there. It's gone. You know, and there's a
Right.
subtraction or there's an addition, and it's that or whatever else it is. So we can already do that differencing, and that differencing technology will find its way into much other Bentley software over time. So we already have that in Bentley Point Tools, but because that exactly goes to your point that we need to be able to compare point clouds very accurately.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. So the second point is cloud storage and cloud data management. I mean,
point clouds, but also, in the
services that you just announced about doing managed cloud services, that presents a huge big data problem because point clouds are going to be so ubiquitous, as you said.
We're talking about, we know of organizations today that have literally terabytes of point cloud data, right? Yeah. And so, it's a huge problem. And it's only going to become more and more, right? I mean, it's not going to slow down. The rate of acquisition is only going to increase.
So what does that mean for Bentley long term? And I'll finish with this question to give you a vision, a softball question to hit out of the park.
Thank you.
In terms of the vision of what the company becomes, not just a product-oriented company, but a solution company, knowing that you've got cloud services, lots of big data issues, as well as delivering engineering solutions. Where's the vision for where you take, whether it's geospatial products or others, in this type of asset build design workflow?
The vision is to, again, Bob, you might express it, but the vision is, so there's different ways of doing things, and, there's products, we sell products, okay? Then you sell some services to implement products. And then you deliver managed services, and you deliver service level agreements, and you basically seamlessly provision a service to an end user. That's where we're going. That's what Greg was talking about, what Pinder was talking about this morning. So these things won't go away initially. It's all going to coexist. But the trajectory is towards that. That's where it's going. And the way that you then interact with users, the way you have to understand their usage patterns, the way you work with them so that they can get more out of the software. It's a really different paradigm. Have you read that book, Consumption Economics?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I really recommend it. It's a really good read. I mean, after you've read about two-thirds of it, it does get a bit repetitive, but the basic premises in there, I think, are really interesting about how the creation and delivery of software is going to change and how people will interact, how you'll charge for it. Now, the good thing is at Bentley, we are so, we innovated aggressively in subscription-based relationships with our users anyway, so that's just a mere evolution for us. There's no big step function change there in the commercial relationship, but there are other big changes in how we deliver our offerings.
Yeah.
But we're in a good place in relation to how, our business model allows us to merely adapt. There's no big step function change.
Yeah, I would agree.
Consumption economics is a really, really, really good read.
Yeah. I would say, expand on that, Bentley has been a services-oriented company for a long time. You saw how it breaks down in our revenue between our subscription and our perpetual license or sales. But the traditional model for software providers in general, not Bentley specifically, but in general, and some of our competitors even today, has been we sell you a license and we wish you good luck,
mm-hmm.
And now the onus of getting value out of that software is completely on the user, and whether the software just then sits on a shelf and doesn't get used at all, or whether it gets used inappropriately without the proper training and, or ineffectually and all that is completely their problem. We've received the money for the license and, that's not how Bentley has operated for a long time. And so, we've been majority subscription services. So if someone's not extracting value from their software, guess what? If I stop reading the magazine I subscribe to, and my wife says, I got this thing for renewal. Do you want to renew? I go, no, I don't want to renew. I don't get any value out of that. Well, that's been our modus operandi for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And so like Richard said, this is not a step function. It's an evolution to where we're,
Right. And the other thing we introduced, I don't know if you're aware of this, Joe, but the annual portfolio balancing. So for all our users, if they're not getting value from software that's become legacy, they're just not working on those sorts of projects, they can trade that in the price they pay for it. For
I remember that from
the software. And you know, that's since we're just still running, and so again,
and it's current list price, not what they paid for it.
Oh, it's current list. Stand corrected. Current list. So you know, again, we've been trying to make sure that we don't have the shelfware, that we are mutually vested in our users getting value out of the software,
right.
And because that's the way the whole thing is going. You know, it's not throwing that software over the fence and running. It's about being in a relationship where, you know, they're getting fundamental value and are doing all the things you can as an organization to support them extracting that maximum value. And I think the other thing is, you know, the other big change is software companies need to change. Okay, we all want to change. But then on the user side, you know, the IT departments and, you know the slow procurement processes and the pain, that's got to change as well. So they've got to be more nimble. Which means that the power balance will change there too in the user organizations, I think, so to allow them to be more effective.
All right. Okay, Richard, Bob, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me today on another Directions Magazine podcast. If you'd like to comment about today's interview, please write to me at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tell a friend about Directions.